Hello and welcome to World Business Report on the BBC World Service. Will Bain with you today. Great as always to have your company on the programme. This time tomorrow, America will be deciding. On World Business Report today, we're going to reset why the economy is the key battleground in this election, how the candidates are responding to that backdrop, and crucially for all of us listening beyond the borders of the United States, what might it mean for the goods we trade, the prices we pay, and how whoever wins will shape the direction of the global economy over the next 4 years. We'd love to know your thoughts, your observations, your questions. Perhaps you've got some concerns about how any changes in policy in the United States might affect your business. You can get in touch with us in all the usual ways on our WhatsApp number. It's plus 44 for the UK, 330-678-3033. You can leave a voice note on there as well. So that's plus 44, 330-678-3033. Delighted to say, throughout the next half hour, the BBC's economics editor, Faisal Islam, is going to be with us. Faisal, you're absolutely steeped in this stuff, and yet, pulling the BBC curtains back a little bit, you were very excited, or perhaps excited is the wrong word, animated about what this election might mean for the global economy. Why? Why does it matter? Perhaps if our listeners all around the world are listening now beyond the United States, why do you think it matters so much potentially to them economically?
It kind of, for me, is it the economy stupid versus is it inflation stupid? That famous phrase. And the popular wisdom in terms of US elections has been it's about the absence of recession. That's what helps an incumbent. But of course, we haven't had a situation where we've had such high inflation. And certainly when I have been reporting in America, when you ask people, voters, about the economy, they answer you about specifically inflation. So that's in terms of what's going to happen over the next couple of days. The consequences of that decision then are, for the rest of the world, do matter, because the US economy has performed, in comparative terms, really quite well over the past 4 years in terms of the big variables: growth, jobs. It's almost like a crisis hasn't happened. The same crisis, the pandemic and the energy crisis, the US economy has just carried on growing, caught up with its trend level of growth. So the line of the US economy has just carried on, whereas us in the rest of the G7, including the UK, have been high-fiving, getting out the champagne corks just when we've made up the losses. We're at the same level. So imagine that chart, totally different. So there's something that's gone on in the US that has been really outperformed. The question for me is, if that does become the determining factor of the election and the incumbent wins, then you have a big thumbs up to a way of reshaping the US economy under Bidenomics, involving hundreds of billions of dollars of subsidy. If that is rejected, which may well happen if Donald Trump wins, you then have this Y junction, this fork in the road, and a different approach will be taken, which involves much more protectionism, tariffs, putting up a wall around you. You know, the idea of not just, you know, we've heard of trade weapons being used against individual sectors or countries, but like against everything.
It's complete rethinking of how to run an economy in most of our lifetimes, right?
Absolutely. And in many ways, the sort of the hit to living standards, or the slowdown in the economy after the financial crisis, many expected a wide sort of round of protectionist measures that never materialized. The sort of world economy came together. The G20 was formed. If this happens, it isn't just about what happens between America and China or America and Europe. It's about the knock-on impact, about, you know, what do the Indonesians say about what the Chinese are doing to India? You know, it's every single, you know, the moral leadership on free markets and free trade, building up living standards for all, which is a sort of the heart of economics, of the economic insights of the major institutions. If that goes, then it goes everywhere, not just for America.
And also those economic rules that we've had for decades, right? The economic kind of orthodoxy of we stick to rules about state support for industries or things like that, that those are being kind of rewritten here in this campaign too, potentially.
I think they already have been rewritten. It's about where you take it. It's about whether you think this was a temporary measure to deal with some crises, or whether this is a fundamental change in how the world economy is wired. Then, to be clear, I think that's happening anyway. You know, you're already seeing, and let's just talk, we've been talking in the general, let's talk about the specific. You know, this month, you know, we've seen reports already that the TSMC, so the Taiwan Semiconductor Company factory in Arizona, a key swing state, no coincidence there, is making chips, and the yield is higher than in Taiwan. This seems like a very sort of inside baseball, inside semiconductor story. Absolutely fundamental, not just to economics, but also geopolitics. Who gets to make those? And in the previous decade and decades, I should say, but not centuries, they've only been made in Taiwan. From next year, they're made in the USA. And that is a result of massive subsidies under Bidenomics. So they've already changed. That changes geopolitics, changes geoeconomics, it changes strategy, it changes America's sense of self-reliance. What do you think the dirigist statist voices within the Europe are thinking about that? They're thinking, well, hang on. The Americans have done something we would have dreamt of doing. Why haven't we done more of this? And then everybody around the world. So does that win? Or does, in fact, putting up massive consumer trade barriers around you win? Where do the iPhones of the future get made? Where do the electric vehicles? What's about the geography of world economics? Is at a Y junction like today?
And who's a buyer and who's a builder and who's a doer? This is why we think over the next half hour, this is going to be interesting to you, even if you've got no interest in who wins or you've not got any vote in the next sort of 48 hours or so. Plenty more on tariffs. We're going to hold that thought, but Faisal led us to it. The kind of closing days of arguments, extraordinary. I was watching the NFL, the American football, just last night, and our adverts almost at every break in the American football around prices, around inflation, around who set up the economy, about who broke the economy. Here's a little bit of how we got here so far.
You know, in recent weeks, it's become clear to me that I need to unite my party. So I've decided the best way forward is to pass the torch to a new generation.
Throughout this campaign, I've seen the best of America, and I've seen what is holding you back and weighing you down. High costs, fundamental rights taken away, and politics that have driven fear and division.
When I first came into office, I cut taxes more than any other president. We developed the greatest economy in history by far. When I left office, it changed. Inflation destroyed the lives of so many people. Our country has gone to hell.
I live for the future of my children. I want them to be able to afford a house and groceries.
I think that if Trump doesn't win, this country is finished.
I am living paycheck to paycheck, almost to the penny.
We were averaging like $400 a month in groceries. It's closer to three times that now.
They've had 3.5 years to fix the border. They've had 3.5 years to create jobs and all the things we talked about. Why hasn't she done it?
So Michigan, 2 days to go.
Many folks can't afford to take a day off of work to take their kids into Salt Lake when they get sick, and you have to, you know, be able to spend $1,000.
I hardly ever go out anymore. I don't eat a lot because I just can't afford it. I mean, I'm retired, but I do work because I can't afford not to.
They're eating the pets of the people that live there.
You talk about extreme.
I feel like immigrants, any individuals outside of our economy who are trying to come into our country, are just simply making the economy better.
As president, I'll bring a new generation of leadership. I'll take on price gouging and bring down the cost of groceries and housing and prescriptions. I'll fight for your freedom to make your own choices, and I will protect your health care and your benefits, not take them away.
We're going to make America great again, greater than ever before. I will fight for you with every breath. And I will never let you down.
We have momentum. It is on our side. Can you feel it?
President Trump is literally putting his life on the line.
All we have to do is go out on Tuesday and vote, vote, vote.
I'm Kamala Harris, and I approve this message.
I'm Donald J. Trump, and I approve this message.
So there you go. There's a bit of a flavor of the campaign and how we've got to where we are now. Faisal, you've done a lot of the kind of big picture, the international stuff there. Cost of living pressure, fairly obviously, like a lot of the big elections this year, has dominated the American one, right? What's the kind of backdrop? Give us your sense. You were there recently.
Yeah, I mean, obviously, inflation shot up in America, affecting energy prices, gas prices, fuel prices, petrol prices, as we call them in the UK, and grocery prices. And even as it's come down after the Federal Reserve raised interest rates, even as that happened, obviously the level of prices is significantly higher. It's material. It's what people notice. That sense of going into a shop or going to a restaurant or a cafe in America, as it is probably anywhere else, anywhere in Europe, is, oh, does it really cost that much? You know, that is visceral. People feel that. We can talk about GDP and the current account deficit and, you know, anything till we're blue in the face.
But some of that stuff is particularly unusual for American listeners, right? Because they control a lot more of their economy. It's a giant country, right? Yes. With all the natural resources in the world. They make lots of things. They have lots of oil and gas. They have lots of agricultural goods, all the type of things that are much more variable for a lot of us listening around the world. They don't have that problem. They make and do a lot of that stuff. That is slightly unusual for an American, yes, as a result.
They normally have a greater degree of immunity to what's going on in the world economy, but that's changing, obviously. They were protected, actually, compared to Europe from the energy crisis. There's no doubt the energy crisis obviously hit Europe far more with its greater dependence on Russian oil and gas. Indeed, the American oil industry and energy industry did incredibly well from supplying Europe with LNG and its exports of other forms of, ironically, hydrocarbons, given the transition to green energy that Joe Biden has tried to push. But yes, you know, there has been a major price shock. It has dissipated as interest rates have come up. But we've started to see interest rates being cut by the US Federal Reserve, which is a key signal that although the spike up in inflation was painful, that cycle has turned. In fact, you see everywhere in the world now that it's not just that those inflation rates have come down to normal levels sufficient for central banks to cut interest rates, but it's this kind of signal that hasn't caused a permanent inflationary crisis, which is what's happened in other places when you've got double-digit rates of inflation. So yeah, so inflation didn't spike as high. It's come down now. It took maybe a bit longer to come down. The reason why it maybe stayed higher than people expected is because the US economy, as I was discussing before, has done very well. And then there is this other factor, which, you know, you've heard the Federal Reserve mention. I did an interview with one of the Federal Reserve members a few months back. And that has also fed into the American economy, which has been this availability of labor. Some of that has come through sources that are now politically very contentious. Indeed, the heart of this election. Now, we're focusing on the economy. That is a material factor.
Migration.
Exactly.
Visas and who gets visas and who doesn't.
The sheer number of workers in America has helped with its outsized growth versus the rest of the world. I mean, that's an interesting thing. I talked about the growth performance. The question is, do people note or notice that when you're outperforming other countries? You know, you know, I guess it's a salient and relevant fact that, you know, the counterfactual here is like other advanced economies have simply not grown as fast as the Americans. But I'm in a different context, different election. You know, whose GDP is it? is a famous quote that came out of, I think, the Brexit referendum in the UK. And as I say, you know, it's obvious. It kind of goes without question. In fact, when you see most of the TV and radio reports on this election talking about the economy, it's actually specifically about inflation. I heard Alan Lichtman, the famous historian that does these 13 keys and he's predicted every elections. He somehow predicted every election since 1860, which was about 100 years before he was born, which is interesting. But he is adamant that it's actually the economy and not inflation. So psychologically, people feel their sense of job security and they care about that and their children's job security more than it is their the actual prices. Important to note that wages have also exceeded prices in America, which hasn't been the case elsewhere.
All of that really interesting and really important for the conversation. We're going to hear a little bit of a piece that our North America business editor, Michelle Fleury, has done on tariffs in just a moment. Let's just bring Rachel Winter into the program. Rachel, of course, the investment manager and partner at Killick & Co. Here in London, and regular listeners will know, always helps us pick through the financial markets on a Monday here on World Business Report. Rachel, great to have you with us.
Thanks, Will.
I guess a bit of the news today is that the dollar has been weakening against a whole bunch of currencies today. Is that to what end? Why?
Well, that's based on the election. So throughout the month of October, we saw the dollar strengthening. And a lot of people took that to mean that Trump was going to win the election. The reason being that Trump is very in favor of tariffs. Tariffs result in higher prices. They result in inflation. And if we have inflation, then interest rates would have to rise to get that inflation under control. And when interest rates are higher, we tend to get a stronger currency, i.e. a stronger dollar. So throughout the month of October, the dollar was rising. People thought that was because Trump was going to win. However, over the weekend and over the course of today, we have seen the dollar weakening a bit. And people are suggesting that perhaps that means that Trump is falling back and Harris is moving ahead.
Well, I was going to have a bit more of a conversation with Rachel there, but given that she's done my job for me and taken us towards tariffs, let's hear Michelle's report. Michelle Fleury, our North America business correspondent, has been looking at exactly that issue of tariffs.
I'm here at Workman Cycles, a company that's been crafting bicycles since 1898. It's the oldest active bike maker, and they're still hard at work.
This is our industrial grade tricycle, so this is what we basically ship to the largest companies in the world.
Owner Wayne Sosin is scared of what may be coming next, more tariffs.
So tariffs haven't helped you create more jobs?
It basically hurt our bottom line.
Wayne Sosin's bicycles are made in the US, but many of the parts, such as tyres, seats and pedals, are sourced from abroad. Donald Trump's 2018 tariffs on materials like steel and aluminium were intended to support small American manufacturers. However, for Sosin, they've had the opposite effect.
We ate all the costs of the tariffs, but we have no choice but to pass some of this on to consumers. And the big effect on us is if we weren't paying these tariffs, think about what we could have done with that money. Could have made investment in machinery, personnel, to grow our business. Instead, we're paying a tax.
Most bicycles in the US are now imported from China, and Sosin's company is one of the few remaining manufacturers in the country. But that no longer feels like a badge of honor.
It hurt us badly. It basically hurt our bottom line with no benefit.
And there's more on the line.
But the word tariff is the most beautiful word in the dictionary. Remember that. It's going to make our country rich.
This time around, Donald Trump is eyeing 20% tariffs on all foreign imports to the US and 60% or more on goods made in China.
Our campaign is about the people.
On the campaign trail, Kamala Harris frequently mocks Donald Trump over tariffs.
He will impose what I call a Trump sales tax because he has an intention of putting an at least 20% tax on everyday necessities, which economists have estimated would cost the average person more than $4,000 more a year.
Yet she still appears willing to support some tariffs on China for favoured industries like semiconductors.
None of these policies are actually free.
Michael Froman, former President Obama's chief trade negotiator, says it all points to a new era in Washington, one where a closed-door policy is becoming the norm.
There certainly is less enthusiasm around pursuing what we might call an affirmative trade agenda in terms of liberalization, openness, reduction of barriers. And I think these other tools that are now being used, tariffs, restrictions on foreign investment, export controls, industrial policy, they're probably here to stay.
What about America's trading partners? They presumably are not going to take this lying down either.
If the U.S. does impose tariffs on other countries, certainly there will be pressure within those countries to retaliate or to put restrictions on U.S. exports. And that's the kind of trade-off that the U.S. administration will also have to wrestle with, which is not just the cost of the tariffs, the first cost, but also the cost of retaliation.
Restricting imports was meant to boost employment and help businesses like Workman Cycles. But Wayne Sosin says it's hurting more than helping.
Speaking from the bicycle industry, I just think what they've done is discouraging companies like us from continuing to have American people making our bikes. The whole tariff thing makes great headlines. It sounds like, oh, we're going to bring jobs back to America. I just haven't seen it.
All of which leaves free trade without a clear champion in the race for the White House.
That's our North America business correspondent, Michelle Fleury there. Michelle's going to be back with us on the programme on Wednesday when we're live picking through all the results that we know here on the programme. Rachel Winter with us from Killick & Co. here in London. Rachel, you were teeing up why markets were particularly kind of worried and nervous about the tariff element of that. Just expand a bit more because it's impacting company shares all around the world as well.
It is, yeah. So as was very clear from that anecdote we just heard, tariffs do push prices up for all. They are inflationary. And if people have less money available to spend on goods, then company share prices will come down because they simply won't be selling as much. So I think most economists would speak out against tariffs.
And it's adding to costs for companies too, because they're making decisions, right, to sort of very quickly move, say, production of something somewhere in a timescale that they wouldn't do in an environment without them, right, as well.
Exactly. So I think the world has been in a state of globalization for so long that so many companies and so many manufacturers, even though they may be compiling a product in one particular company, they're probably buying the raw inputs and the raw materials all over the world. So they will be impacted by tariffs if tariffs are applied on imports.
Faisal, that state of globalization, as Rachel puts it, that's exactly when you were out in Washington talking to not just IMF decision makers, but big business leaders too. That was their concern around tariff policy as well, right? I mean,
absolutely. The IMF did a report a few months back saying that if there was a sort of disorderly breakdown of trade relations between the major economic blocks, you could see a hit of 7% of world GDP, or as Geeta Gopinath, the first deputy managing director, told me, that would be the size of the entire German and French economies, which could be lost. Now, that's a big could. You know, obviously, there's different degrees of trade tension that could be engendered in this sorts of situation. But, you know, some of what we're hearing, or some of what we've heard, I mean, again, it's all quite vague. We heard there about the potential domestic inflationary impacts and price impacts of a generalized tariff in America, but you know, 10%, 20% on friend and foe, extra for electric vehicles, extra if it's from China, extra if it's from a country that is labeled that doesn't want to use the dollar. You know, it's like, you know, what's clear, and a lot of this comes from his ex-trade secretary, a very interesting book by Robert Lighthizer, you know, gives a good account of why this is necessary for America, you know, is very different approach to this. No great panging, if you like, in the heart for Donald Trump for like this globalized free trade of low prices for everybody and efficiency for everybody. It's about America first.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, let's broaden the conversation here and bring in Dr. Shiricho Nishioka. Dr. Nishioka is Professor of Economics at West Virginia University in the United States. Professor, welcome to World Business Report.
Thank you for having me here.
You've got good historic context on exactly what Faisal was saying as well. Talk us through then what we've seen when stuff like this has been enacted in the past.
Yeah, actually, that's right. You know, in the 1930s, for example, it's a really old example. So the Republican candidate, so the Hoover, promised to the farmer to impose a tariff, and then Congress ended that with having the tariff, was massive tariff, and then so the other nation retaliated. So that's a huge consequence of the slowdown of the global economy. That's one really good example of the fail of this massive tariff made.
And yet, as Faisal rightly said there, J.D. Vance, running mate of President Trump, could be the vice president in a couple of days' time, said absolutely clearly, unambiguously, standing on the stage, globalization has failed America. What is he pointing to there? What is the data telling us to back that argument up?
Yes, that's right. Basically many issues here, and historically speaking, so this type of the political pressure was only successful, probably in the 1980s, when Japan was really exported a lot of the car to the U.S. market. And then President Reagan pressured Japan to reduce export, and they appreciated Japanese yen. And then what happened at the end is Japanese company moved production base to the United States, and that's created quite a lot of job to the U.S. market.
And what's your sense then going forward? What do you think is at stake?
But in the case of the China, typically this is the case of the China is much more like an unfair practice of the Chinese business. So it's a China's intellectual property violation and state-owned enterprise and subsidy. So these are probably unfair to the American business. And this type of action have to be probably able to use the tariff to protect American business. But that's only the case of the unfair practice of the business in the foreign, for the country and the companies.
Professor Nishioka, Oh, Professor, thanks so much for your time. Dr. Tsuchiro Nishioka, Professor of Economics at West Virginia University. Thanks so much for your time. Rachel Winter still with us. Rachel, from a market's perspective, is it a tight election result come the middle of the week that we'll see market turmoil, or is there something, or is that sort of baked in the jargon at this point?
No, I think the worst possible scenario would be a really, really tight contested result. If we had several days until we got the result and then that was contested, I think we could see a bit of a downturn in the market. So I don't think that is fully priced in at the moment.
Faisal, I'm watching former President Trump up above me and you in the studio here, a rally in Raleigh, North Carolina, key swing state. Bring us back to where you started. Do you see this as kind of a critical election about what modern economics looks like for countries?
It is, not just in terms of trade, in terms of the example it sets for the rest of the world, in terms of the assumption that we're going to spend a lot of money in order to re-equip the world economy for the challenges of net zero. If America goes in a different direction, well, I have heard sounds out of German politicians about their election, which may come quicker than expected, about how, if you like, the home of BMW and the likes, well, they're starting to question the move to electric vehicles. Does that become a big election issue in another top three world economy? I don't think China's going to go down that road. So you start to see the example being set at the top of the world economy. And I see this as a big, as a, you know, this is obviously a big moment, the US election, but at this specific moment, even bigger.
Come back on the program with us on Wednesday. Thanks so much for your time. Thanks to Faisal. Thanks to Rachel. And to all of you for listening to World Business Report.